Oh boy. Well, I love that they call my show the Jen Royal Experience.
Do they call it the general experience?
Yeah.
They do?
Yeah.
Be honest with me. When you were in high school, that's what you used to refer to dating yourself as, like would-be suitors, you'd say. You ready for the Jen Royal
Please, can we
Experience?
not talk about high school? I was such a loser.
Buddy, you know, my high school, to get a good idea of my high school days, just imagine Beaker the Muppet. That's basically it. That's essentially my entire life, not just high school.
So
Just
funny.
Beaker the Muppet. As a matter of fact, that fucking red puppet was designed based on Beaker. The guy who's putting it together, he said,
Oh, right, yeah,
what do you look like? I said, honestly, I said, it's not pretty, but just, you know, Beaker from the Muppets? Just slap a fucking goatee on that motherfucker and we're good to roll.
I love Beaker.
And there we go.
What was he wearing? Well, he was just, you know, he was wearing a red Argyle sweater and tan trousers and red shoes. No, he's not retarded.
One month ago, the Boston Red Sox were the hottest team in baseball. Today, May, what is today? May 22nd, they're something different. They're an enigma wrapped inside a riddle and somehow still paying John Lackey shitloads of money. And today on the latest Surviving Grady podcast, we are going to try to figure what this team is really all about. And we are happy to have joining us once again. How the fuck do we keep conning her into showing up? Once again, Emmy winner, WEEI personality, blogger extraordinaire, queen of Twitter, Jen Royal is with us again today. Jen, how the fuck do we keep conning you into coming back?
If you keep cursing at me, I won't.
I'm sorry. It's the
That's
it's.
three F-bombs in like 25 seconds.
Sorry, it's the Michelob Ultra. They got me. Once they get the hooks in me, I'm trash. But
This is a very unprofessional podcast I don't want to be a part of.
you're right. It's only going downhill. You've officially sat inside the roller coaster, so it's all downhill from here. But bad words aside,
I'm just kidding. You know you can't offend me.
That's right.
You've tried. You've tried very hard to
I have
offend me,
tried. I have
and
tried.
it hasn't worked.
It hasn't. You are offense proof, and I think I personally think that's part of your charm. 20 games into April, and I know this because before I started drinking, I did the math, and I actually looked this up. 20 games into April, the Red Sox were 13-7. Now, 20 games into May, they are 9-11. Not disgusting, but certainly a very different team, a very different performance than what we saw during the first month of the season. Which do you think is the more accurate gauge of what this team is all about? Do you think they were overperforming in April? Do you think they're underperforming in May? Do you think somewhere in the middle is what we're getting? What's your assessment thus far of the 2013 Red Sox?
Well, I don't think you can really say a team is overperforming. I think when a team performs really well, I think that just shows what they're capable of. So I'm going to have to say that they're underperforming in May. I mean, I had definitely high hopes for this Red Sox team coming in, and I think, just talking to some of the guys, and, chemistry goes such a long way, and I know it's something that this team has talked about, the owners have talked about, John Farrell has talked about, the players have talked about, the fans have talked about. The team chemistry, I think, has really gotten this team in second place, or in first place for quite some time. Now they're sitting in second place. Obviously, it's only May. I hate talking about the standings unless you're, 10 or 15 games back and you have no chance of moving up, especially in this tough American League East. But I think the fact that Bobby Valentine was such a clubhouse cancer and it just created such a negative energy in that clubhouse. And, I think people sometimes forget that, a clubhouse is a player's safe haven. That's their home. That's their home, more often than, their home where they actually reside.
Right.
And being around a bunch of guys that all support each other, that want to win for each other, and having a manager that cares about the team, that respects the team, and that the team respects in return, I think is major. And I just didn't see that last year with Bobby Valentine. It was no secret. I think before Bobby even, managed his first game, everybody was calling it a joke and the season was going to be a failure. And of course, there were a ton of injuries and a lot of bad attitudes on the team with Gonzalez and Beckett and Crawford. They're gone. and bringing in guys like Shane Victorino and Mike Napoli and Johnny Gomes and David Ross, I think, has really been a major factor on this ball club. You know, right now they're just not hitting with runners in scoring position. I think they're depending way too much on Lester and Buchholz. The back end of the rotation isn't doing crap. The bullpen has never been an issue. I think the closer situation, however, has definitely, you know, caused some problems, particularly with Joel Hanrahan. I'm a big Andrew Bailey fan. I think Andrew Bailey should have always been the closer. I wasn't happy with bringing Hanrahan in. I thought that's what you got Andrew Bailey for, and I think that, you know, Andrew Bailey is a proven closer, and he should have stayed in that role. I don't think they needed to go out and get anybody else. I think Koji Uehara has been such an amazing addition to this bullpen, whether he's the setup man or the closer. I covered him in Baltimore. I've said this on EEI. When he's on, he's on. And when he's off, he's horrible. We're seeing the good Koji. Hopefully that can stick. And, you know, Koji in the eighth with Bailey in the ninth, I think, is a pretty good one-two punch, especially with Lester and Buchholz, and hopefully Lackey, you know, picking up his game. I think we saw that in his last outing when he almost had a no-hitter. I picked John Lackey to win 13 games this year. Unfortunately, I think I'm going to be wrong. But I picked him
to win 20, as disgusting as that sounds.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. That's a brutal assessment. But, I mean, I think, you know, 10 to 13, you know, I think is a good bounce back season for somebody coming off of Tommy John. The good news about all of this is that the rest of the division, really except for the Yankees, is kind of sucking. You see the Orioles kind of taking a step back. They're not pitching very well. I think they've lost 4 out of their last 5. Tampa Bay has been struggling, especially now with David Price on the DL. You know, the problem with the Tampa Bay Rays is that they have these really talented kids in their farm system, and once they blossom to superstars, they can't afford to keep them and they have to trade them.
Right.
So, you know, losing guys like James Shields and Matt Garza and BJ Upton, I think, is hurting them. I think they're seeing that now, putting the weight on Evan Longoria and, of course, David Price, who's now – Truman, stop it. Sorry, Truman is chewing my desk.
That's not President Truman there, is it, I'm guessing, right?
Better than chewing my leg. But, you know, I think if Jacoby Ellsbury can get his head out of his ass.
We may just want to explain that Truman's your dog so that someone doesn't think there's a gentleman named Truman chewing your leg.
Yeah,
as we're
everyone knows Truman's my
gotcha,
dog.
Gotcha.
If Jacoby Ellsbury can get his head out of his ass and, you know, Will Middlebrooks can get healthy, although he's actually been sort of one of the bright stars.
Right.
With Daniel Nava, I think if everyone can just do their part, which really I don't think is asking too much considering how much money these guys are making, and unfortunately, we're seeing, you know, Shane Victorino just dealing with way too many injuries, and Mike Napoli's power numbers have gone down. You know, we didn't think that kid was going to keep pace, but, you know, I think there's just so many factors. But I think what we saw in May is what this team is capable of. You know, are they going to, you know, they were on pace to win like 110 games at
right.
some point. You know, that's not going to happen. So I think we're seeing the lows of this team in May because the highs were so high in April.
No, I agree. I think also one thing that has to be acknowledged is the fact that I know they're not doing this intentionally, but they are masters of scheduling, and I'll explain that. I think in April, when we needed it the most, with the marathon incident, the bombings, when we needed something to kind of rally behind to get our minds off these horrible things, they kicked ass, and you know, kind of all culminated with Ortiz dropping the F-bomb during the first Fenway game after that whole incident. And I think when we needed it most, they were playing at their best, and I think that was a good thing for us as a city as a whole. Now that everyone's focused on the Bruins, they're kind of shitting the bed, which isn't bad because it's sad to see it happening, but most people's focus are on the Bruins and seeing how far they go. It looks like they're going to wrap up this series with the Islanders as well. So
right.
There's something to distract us. When all eyes get back,
hey,
by
shithead, then, Rangers.
Rangers, I'm sorry. That's the hockey fan in me. But by the time everyone focuses back on the Red Sox, hopefully these things will be all straightened out. So you had mentioned our good friends, your good friend Josh Beckett, and Adrian Gonzalez and Kyle Crawford. Obviously, the lack – a lot has been said about Valentine and last year and that whole mess. But I think you hit the nail on the head, and I'd be interested in your take on that too. I think clubhouse culture and the interaction of the folks on the team, the players, does go a long way. And do you think enough can be said about those three elements being extracted? I mean, is that, you know, 50, perhaps even 75% of the problem now gone this year?
Yeah, I think 100% of the problem is gone, and that's John Valentin. Why do I say that?
Him Bobby and Beckett kind of look alike.
He was my favorite. He was one of my favorites. I think 100% of the problem is gone, and that was Bobby. He had to go. I mean, that was the biggest joke of a hire, I think, in Red Sox history. And I'm sure Bobby Valentin is a very nice man. He's just a shitty manager. And unfortunately, you know, it just, the cause and effect of that hire was so dreadful that it just caused way too many issues. And I think it spiraled. I don't think, at one point, honestly, Tim, I actually felt bad for him. I don't think he could say anything right. You know, everything he said, people just nitpicked and got after him. And I know that feeling. I know that feeling of being in a strange environment where people aren't pulling for you. You know, I was in Baltimore, and people hated me because I was a female with an opinion. They hated me because I was from Boston. And no matter what I said, they twisted it or they, you know, they just harped on it. And so I understood what Bobby was going through. And at one point, I just felt in my heart that he needed to go. And for his own mental health, you know, I don't think that being ganged up on is really any fun. I mean, well, you know, it can't be good for anybody to know that an entire city is against you. So I think the best thing for him, obviously, was to leave. I think we all figured it would last 1 year, but I think that was really the bulk of the problem. And, you know, Crawford, who I have to say, I love Carl Crawford. I covered him for 10 years when I covered the Yankees and he was with Tampa and, you know, then with the Red Sox. I've done, you know, numerous interviews with him for print and on camera. He's always been a class act with me and I know with other people. I think the transition from Tampa where there was no pressure to win, no pressure to play well, and then, you know, transitioning to Boston where it's all about pressure and it's all about playing well, I think that, I don't think he could handle that. I don't think he could handle the heavy contract. And, you know, I heard he didn't like the weather. And, you know, Boston's a tough place to play in. And, yeah, it's cold here in April and May. And if you're not used to that weather, playing in a dome and playing in Florida, then, it can be tough. And I know he wasn't happy hitting at the bottom of the lineup, which is something he wasn't used to as, you know, a one or a two hitter up in Tampa, you know, because of his speed and being at the top of the lineup. And, you know, Gonzalez, I think a lot of the things that Crawford did wrong in that clubhouse, I don't think were publicized. I had heard that, you know, he was trying to play GM too much. He was texting the front office. He was, you know, not one of the better teammates. And of course, Josh Beckett, who's just a fat piece of crap, who
don't sugarcoat things for us. I mean,
stand the guy. I can't stand the guy. He stands for everything that we don't want here in Boston, that we don't want from our athletes. I felt he was selfish. I felt he was lazy. I didn't think he cared. And go play in Kansas City then. You know, like, we demand greatness from our athletes, whether you're in the media or you're a fan, and if you don't give us 100%, then we're going to come after you. And at one point, I mean, I don't think I felt bad for him, but I just felt it was best for him to go, because even if he had a legit injury, people were going to question it. Even if he went golfing on a day off and he deserved it, people were going to question it. I think, you know, between him and Bobby and Crawford and Gonzalez, I think they just wrote their own tickets out of here. And it was just time for everybody to go. Everybody. And yep. I think that's the difference this year.
No, I agree. I think last year will be looked at as such a bizarre aberration in the history of the team. I mean, literally.
Like, last year was such a blur. Like, you know what the sad part is about last year? I don't remember baseball. You know, like, I just remember the drama.
Yeah.
In the bullshit, in the who ran up the back stairs to, you know, to sell out Bobby, you know, for, you know, saying something wrong to Middlebrooks in the dugout. You know, it's just who text messaged, you know, the ownership, who took the picture, of the finger behind Bobby Valentine's head. Like, all I remember was the negative drama. I don't remember any baseball.
Right. It's like that time my grandmother touched me indecently. I've just kind of, you know, put it all out of my mind. You know, you think about something, you just kind of forget about it. And it's like it never happened. It's like Total Recall, you know? You just have,
you know. You loved it. That's the most action you've gotten in your entire life.
It was something awesome. I got to say, you know what? It might have happened more than once. I might have gone back for more. That's how into it I was. But I think you're right. I think it was almost like the Total Recall mind wiping at the end. You almost didn't want to. I actually became fascinated in, and anyone who still reads the blog saw that I was, my sick fascination became, towards August, I wanted this to be the worst Red Sox team of my lifetime. Not because I wished ill on the players, or at least not most of them, but because if you're going to do something, do it hardcore, man. If you're going to suck, then let's go right through the fucking floor and right to the earth's core, you know? I mean, I wanted them to be the worst team, and they were. It was the worst Red Sox team of my lifetime, and my lifetime is 23 years. So that happened, and it's over, and I agree. Now, you were one of the first folks, and I don't even like to use words like Twitter sphere or whatever, but early on, you had been suggesting that Mike Napoli would be someone the Red Sox should be interested in and would be interested in, and I know that you know him. You have a close relationship with him, a friendship. I don't know that you are privy to any of his commentary on the clubhouse atmosphere this year, but from what you've heard, if you're allowed to speak of such things, is it a better place? I mean, does it sound like it's actually a nice place to be now? It's no longer this cancerous place where dreams go to die.
Well, he wasn't here for all that crap.
Right.
And, you know, I've asked him, you know, he does his blog with me every month for Sports Real Boston. And, you know, I had talked about, you know, the chicken and the beer stuff. And he said to me, Jen, I don't even want to talk about it. He's like, I wasn't here for it and I know nothing about it and it's not my business.
Right.
I know that he really enjoyed his time in Texas and he was really close to, you know, a lot of players in Texas, including Ann Kinsler and Michael Young, and I know how much he enjoyed his time there. And, you know, the other day, I don't remember what he did. He had a really good road game, and I texted him, and I said, what are you on? You know, joking, not meaning Pete D's, but like, what are you on? And he said, it's just a good feeling here. Unsolicited, he had texted me a couple times and said, like, Jen, I'm having so much fun. Like, this team is awesome. And it goes a long way. And I think I've said this before. Joe Maddon told me, quite possibly maybe 8 or 10 years ago, he said, if you're not having fun, you're not winning. And I'm not sure what comes first, but you have to have both. And that's why Joe Maddon has had so much success, because he creates a fun atmosphere for his players. And I think, you know, John Farrell might not be doing that. He doesn't need to, because they got the right players this season. So I know that, you know, Mike's just having a ton of fun being on this team. And I think they're all enjoying each other's company, which sounds corny, but, you know, it's really important, you know, for everyone to get along. I mean, there's nothing more. I mean, imagine being stuck with 25 guys, you know, for, you know, what, 250 days of the year and not get along, you know, which is why I think Alfredo Aceves is in AAA. I don't think it has to do with his performance. I think once you have one guy being a clubhouse cancer and not being a team player, you start getting, you know, the media is asking questions. The media is asking Aceves questions. The media is asking other players about Aceves. And I think it just creates a negative atmosphere, and they didn't want to have that because they knew they were on a roll in terms of already having good chemistry. So, you know, just talking to Mike, I just know that he loves this group. He loves this group of, I don't even want to say players. I want to say people. He loves this group of people. And I think that was a selling point for him to sign here, was knowing that there were going to be other good guys here. And I mean, that's my best answer. And I don't think that he cared that I shared that information, that he's, you know, unsolicited said to me, I'm having so much fun. I love this team. And I'm happy for him, because I think every team should feel that way.
That's a good point. And I think, you know, you to kind of equate it to a job that normal people would have, I mean, these are your coworkers, but they're also the coworkers that you're essentially living with.
You're
traveling with them. You're sleeping, dining, you know, showering. I mean, it's a, it's,
true.
It's, you know, it's, it, they're roommates, you know, it's, I mean, so put that in perspective, the people you work with every day, and you think to yourself, all right, it's one thing if you can tolerate these people for 6.5 hours a day or 8.5 hours. Me, I usually put in a good 2.5 hours before I pass out from the alcohol. But to put it in perspective, I mean, these are people you're essentially on the road with for a long period. I mean, you live with them for all intents and purposes. You're away from your family. You're with these people become your de facto family, and I think you have to have that relationship. So that's good to hear. It's good to hear that there's because I think that makes a difference. And obviously, we saw last year what the downside of that can be. So it's nice to see that that things seem to be on the upswing, which is always good, and certainly is visible in the performance. In terms of what you've seen from the Red Sox this year, if you could point to one thing that has been, and I know we're only a couple of months in, but so far from what you've seen of the team, what would you say is the biggest surprise for you and the biggest, I don't want to use the term disappointment, but I'm going to use it anyways, and what would you point to as the one thing that you say, geez, you know, I didn't think this was going to turn out as bad as it has?
As bad as it has or as good as it has? I'm going to do good.
Do whatever you want. You can do good. I was more interested in what you think has been good and what you think has not been so good so far.
I think the fact that John Lester and Clay Buchholz are 12-1 combined is pretty incredible.
Certainly.
That's number one. You know, you need a third ace on this team. There really isn't one defined right now. It's been really hard to, you know, I know the 3s, 4s, and 5s of most ball clubs are not going to be as good as the 1 and 2. I mean, that's a pretty obvious statement, but I think Felix DeBrant has sucked. Ryan Dempster has been way too inconsistent. I know he hasn't gotten a lot of run support. He's just, I think he's 2-4. DeBrant is 3-2. Lackey's 2-4. The problem with Lackey and Dempster and DeBrant is, in my opinion, some of them have pitched well. It's just the offense. They're not hitting with runners in scoring position. They're not hitting in the clutch. The power numbers aren't there. And Jacoby Ellsbury isn't doing anything. So you don't have to give Buchholz and Lester a ton of run support. I know Buchholz has not been able to get his 7th win, you know, in consecutive starts because he hasn't gotten run support. I think he's gotten maybe 2 runs in both his starts. So if there's any 2 guys you don't need to hit for, it's really those 2.
Right.
But, you know, unfortunately, Clay Buchholz has faced 2 really good pitchers over his last 2 outings, and they've just pitched a little bit better. But the fact that the offense is kind of slowing down now is a little bit concerning, and I just think that back end of the rotation has got to do a better job. But on a good note, you know, the fact that Buchholz and Lester are playing or pitching to their potential, I think, has been awesome. And it's been awesome to watch because I know there's been so many questions about Lester and whether or not he can handle being the ace of this staff. And I think he's matured so much over the past year. And I think, again, I have to go back to it. I think the fact that Bobby Valentine is gone and the beer and chicken stuff is gone and they have a class act like John Farrell, you know, leading this ball club, I think has made such a big difference.
That's a good point. I think, and I said this a little bit earlier, we discussed this, but my biggest disappointment, and I'm not saying this sarcastically, I'm being serious, my biggest disappointment has been John Lackey, because I did, and I did this, and again, I wasn't trying to be funny when I said this, I really did pencil him in for 20 wins, and coming off Tommy John surgery, I know that's huge unrealistic expectations, and it probably was mostly booze inspired, but I just really wanted him to do well. I mean, in light of all the BS he put up with last year, I kept wanting him to have that season that sort of justifies what we're paying him, what we brought him here for. Would you pretty much say, again, his first game back this year, he was great for like an hour, and then everything just kind of went to shit. He hurt himself, and it's kind of been up and down. I mean, as you said, he did kind of flirt with a no-hitter his last outing. What are your expectations for him? I mean, you had said you put him down for, what, 13 wins or so? I had 20. Obviously, 20 is not going to happen. Would you think when all is said and done, we're going to look at him as – and I don't say this to be mean, but do you think when all is said and done, we're going to look at him as a bust, as something that we probably shouldn't have done?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, first of all, a 6-year contract for a pitcher is ridiculous. Of course, there was that clause in his contract. If he went on the DL, it goes down to 5. I still think 5 is a lot for a pitcher, but that's just the way it is now. There's so many people vying to to sign, you know, a free agent that it becomes, you know, it becomes a gamble.
Right.
You know, everyone's trying to one up each other on years and money. John Lackey has been proven, though, especially in the postseason. So I think that the guy that they didn't get the guy that pitched for Anaheim. And that's the risk that you take, especially with starting pitchers. You know, you don't really know what you're going to get from somebody, especially when you pay them a ton of guaranteed money and you give them a big contract. I will say this about John Lackey. I loved the fact that he rehabbed with the team last year. I loved the fact that he wanted to be with his teammates. He wanted to be a part of the team.
Right.
He lost 15 or 20 pounds. He got in shape. You know, his buddy Josh Beckett was gone. And I thought that I don't think he got enough credit for the way that he handled last year. In coming off of Tommy John surgery, you never know what you're going to get from somebody. Sometimes pitchers are better. Sometimes they're worse. Sometimes they stay the same. So I don't think it was fair for us to have any expectations of John Lackey this year. I think the only expectations we should have had of him were his first year here.
Right.
Coming off that, you know, a good career in Anaheim. Unfortunately, he sucked. And then he got hurt. But absolutely, I mean, he's making $16.5 million. That's unacceptable. And he's a legit third or fourth guy in a rotation, and he's pitching like a number five.
Right. Well, again, I truly wish the best for the guy, and every time he comes out there, I want to root for him, and I do. I mean, you don't root against the hometown boys, but man, I really seems like a nice guy by all accounts, but really hoping that there's still some time. You know, he could. You know, that I'm still in for the 20. I got eight large riding on him hitting 20 games. So,
good luck, buddy.
By eight large with my income, I literally mean $8. But we'll see how that turns out. The last thing I want to ask you about, you've got obviously, you know, hopefully everyone's following you at Jen_Royle, R-O-Y-L-E, on Twitter. You have your blog, sportsrealboston.com, where you have, in addition to yourself, a team of other very talented writers. You've got video on there, you've got Mike Napoli's blog, you've got game recaps, you've got everything. I assume there's some porn hidden there somewhere, because I'm still trying to find it.
That'll come out soon.
Excellent.
I'm still trying to figure out how I can make money off the porn, though, because I think people need to pay to see me naked.
I think the porn... You know what? I think
that shit ain't free, buddy.
You may be the first person to ever utter the line, "I'm trying to figure out how to make money on the porn." Man, porn just... You just throw the porn out there and the money comes in. It's a turnkey operation if everyone existed. But in addition to all the media explosion that is Jen Royle, you are also for the last month have been doing a show on EEI. Mm-hmm. I think you're phenomenal. You had a great show. One of my favorites so far has been you've had Pedro in there. All kinds of guests, all kinds of insight. Just hearing your voice on the radio is an awesome thing. Just tell us a little bit about the show and what we can expect when we tune in. I assume no F-bombs. They can't have you dropping F-bombs on there.
I'm very proud of myself. I haven't needed to use the dump button yet. My show is on WEEI from 1 to 3 o'clock on Saturdays. Unless the Red Sox play at 1, then they either find me another spot or I just get bumped, which is fine. Baby steps. I'm really enjoying it. I'm learning. I've never hosted. I was a co-host in Baltimore. I co-hosted various shows in Baltimore, and I co-hosted the Orioles pregame show from outside of Camden Yards. I was a writer and did television and did a lot of web stuff in New York, and I did television in Baltimore with the Orioles as well. So this is a whole new experience for me.
And you won your Emmy for TV in New York?
I won my Emmy for player interviews on the web for the Yes Network.
Nice.
I was part of that. Hey, you know what? I think maybe it would be a good idea if we like put videos on our website.
You were there when it started.
When it started, like legit. It's so funny because now that's all it is. So it was my job every day to go to Yankee Stadium with the cameraman and just, you know, interview players. The majority of the players I interviewed were actually on the visiting team, which is why when people say, and not many people say this, oh my God, you know so much about other teams. Like, how do you know so much about baseball? I mean, I actually studied the visiting clubhouse, even though I was writing to cover the Yankees. So I was a writer for the Yankee team, but I did video with the visiting clubhouse. And then I got a job with MLB Network Radio, which is now, well, it's on Sirius XM, but at the time it wasn't owned by MLB. Now they've paired up with MLB Network.
Gotcha.
So I think it was just called the Baseball Channel. Now it's called MLB Network Radio. And it was my job to go to the Mets and the Yankees. I did 150 games a year. And I reported in from both stadiums on both home and the visiting team. So I had 2 years of American and National League baseball experience in both clubhouses, where I really learned things I didn't know when I was just covering the Yankees from 03 to 07. You know, then I started doing national stuff from 07 to 09. So now that I have my own radio show, I feel like I'm so much more prepared because I can answer questions about other team and I understand this American League East because I've been around the other teams and not just the Red Sox. But I'm learning. I'm learning from my mistakes, which is good. And, you know, Jason Wolf didn't think it was going to be perfect, and it's not perfect. But I haven't made the same mistake twice, which I think is really important. And I'm so grateful for Jason that after every show I get critiqued and I get constructive criticism, and like a child in a second grade class, I write down my mistakes and I keep those notes with me and I try not to make them again. So I'm improving. Am I making new mistakes? I'm sure. Yes, of course. But I'm getting so much more comfortable. I had my first show. It was 4 weeks ago. I've done 4 shows now. And my first show, I had Pedro Martinez on, and I've known Pedro for 10 years. And just the fact that he was, you know, willing to come on and be part of my first show, I thought was pretty cool. And you know what, Tim? It's all about the relationships that I've built over the past decade. Now that I have my own show, I'm not really relying on a producer to get me guests.
Excellent.
You know, I can have Larry Brooks on, who is one of my favorite hockey writers who covers the New York Rangers. He came on Saturday. And Jerry Krasnick from ESPN. And just, you know, the other people that I've been able to have on as guests have just been because I've been professional over the past decade. And I'm so proud of that. So hopefully, you know, the show does well and I don't get canceled or fired anytime soon, because I'm really enjoying myself. And I think the first few shows I was nervous, and I'm not nervous anymore. Now I'm excited. So I'm getting there. But this is my hometown. And if somebody asked me 5, 6, 7 years ago, what's your dream? I would say to work in Boston. And I'm not really keen on doing television, and I don't really want to write anymore. I love radio, and I have a radio show in my hometown. So I'm so honored, and I'm humbled, and I'm having such a great time doing it. So hopefully everybody listens from 1 to 3 on WEEI on Saturdays.
You're literally living the dream.
I think I am. My mom said to me yesterday, she's like, you're going to be sick of this in 6 months. You're going to want more. I mean, I always want more. You know, I always want a new challenge. I always want to do more things. So, yeah, I guess you could say I'm living the dream, of course.
Excellent. All right, last, before you go, we always like to put you on the spot and just say a quick prediction. Is this Red Sox team making the playoffs in 2013?
Yes.
Excellent. I think so, too. So now we have something to do in October. I'll come to your place and watch the games. You cool with
You're
that?
Not coming in my house.
No, not since the incident.
There's no chance.
Not coming back. Here he is. Lock the doors.
That's not going to happen.
That pale guy's outside again. Why is he here? You got the dog to protect you, so that's good. And I'm sure the
dog's afraid of his own shadow, for Christ's sake.
Well, the restraining order that you've conjured keeps me at least 50 feet away from you, so that's good work on your part. So.
Yeah.
So we're all good. Jen Royal, as always, thank you very much for your time, for your insight. Jen Royal is on Twitter, Jen_Royal, R-O-Y-L-E. She's also at Sports Real Boston. That's Sports R-E-E-L, Boston.com, where you can see Mike Napoli's blog. You can see videos of Jen. We're waiting on the pornography, but hopefully that's coming soon.
Coming soon.
And, of course, Saturdays on EEI. Please tune in and listen. It is time well spent. It's the Jen Royal Experience, as they call it.
Yes. Can I put my pants on now?
Yes, you can. Okay, it's the end of the podcast. Please put your clothes back on. Put your empty beer cans to the side, and the exit is that way. I've actually, in full disclosure, there's so much beer, and I don't want to leave because I'm so fascinated with what you say. I've actually been urinating in these empty beer bottles, so I have to make sure I don't drink those. I have to dump those.
That's so funny. So have I.
Yes.
I have a feeling it was a little more easier for you, though.
It is. Well, you know, I'm Irish, so it's nothing comes easy in that regard. But as always, Jen, thank you very much for your time, and hopefully we'll have you back again, and take care.
Okay, yeah, no chance. Goodbye.